Writer Andrew X. Fahm says touring solo on a bicycle is an act of stupidity, or an act of divine belief. He writes, "It is intense stretches of isolation punctuated with flashes of pure terror and indelible moments of friendship." Fahm made those discoveries on a bicycle trip through Vietnam. His family fled the country when he was 10. His return at age 30 is the subject this week of NPR's special correspondent Susan Stamberg's series of Favorite Summers.
Maybe not favorite, certainly significant. In 1997, Andrew Fahm left California, where he'd grown up, to make a two-wheeled journey through his past. Vietnam, where his father had been a propaganda officer in the South and served time in a Viet Cong death camp after Saigon fell. "Mostly we return because we are lost," Andrew Fahm writes, in Catfish and Mandala, the wrenching and beautiful account of his voyage. What this Vietnamese-American found in his homeland that summer was depravity, men who swallowed the live hearts of cobras for fun, depredation, constant thefts and corruption, as well as a landscape of great beauty and strength. Almost everything he saw amazed him.
Every single one of your senses felt assaulted. The smell, the heat, the sweat, the way that people are breathing on you. You can smell their sweaty breath. Every single pore in your body tingles, and you feel almost like a psychic beating inside of you, simply because there are so many people.
Yeah. You're writing about going through rush hour traffic on your bicycle in Saigon, and you write, "Nobody gives way to anybody. Everyone just angles points, dives directly toward his destination, pretending it is an all-or-nothing gamble. People glare at one another. They fight for maneuvering space." Whoa, you had to be brave to tackle that, huh?
Oh, yeah. And everyone spit. Because of all the pollution, a lot of people have nasal problem and also throat problem. The spitting is quite a big thing. And once you come to a stop sign or an intersection, chances are you might get spit upon.
What about life as you discovered it in the alleys of Vietnam, in the cities, but also in the small towns? It seems as if everything happens there.
Saigon is a very, very big city in a very tiny square area, and lives that people live out their lives in the alley because their quarters are so small that they often cook, gossip, sit in the alley, smoke, and that's where the neighbor met each other, and that's where family congregate to talk and to eat their meals. And also that's where people sell their wares, whatever it is, whether it's a bowl of noodles or a side of beef or needleworks.
And then you write about sort of the nature of the exchanges that you had with the people. You as a, help me with pronunciation, Viet Q, is that the word for
That's
foreign
correct.
Vietnamese?
Yes, for Vietnamese from overseas,
yeah.
Over there.
Well, you write about it, "I come searching for truths, hoping for redeeming grace, a touch of gentility, but not. The abrasiveness of Saigon has stripped away my protective layers. I am raw and bare, and I ask myself, who are these strangers, these Vietnamese, these wanting, wanting, wanting people?"
That was when I was very close to my breaking point. After spending so much time, almost a month in Saigon, the heat, the noise, the people, the deprivation, the overwhelming insensitivity of some of the tradition there really got to me. And I felt as if I didn't leave then, I wouldn't survive another day.
Talk about some of the people you met. It seems to me you met a lot of men who drank until they passed out.
The one time that I drank a lot was on the train, and we were stuck on this cargo train that travel 1,000 miles in 3 days and two nights. And we drank the entire 3 days. Most of the people that drank on that train were officials that watch over the cargo train. They went back, shuttle back between Saigon and Hanoi. And for them, it was so dull. There was nothing to pass the day except for drinking. I really bonded with those guys. That's the one time where you really pour out your guts and just start talking, and you basically end up sleeping on top of each other. And having also spill our gut about everything that mattered to us and what we hoped for. And also venting a lot of grief and anxiety, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of the things they wanted?
I think they just wanted a better life. I mean, most of these guys don't make any money going back and forth. They rarely ever get to see their families. Their funds are so meager that they have to take on hitchhikers along the way to make a little bit of extra cash, which they spent on liquor.
Mm. There were times when it read as if you were almost too American yourself, too westernized to be able to deal with the kinds of things that you were seeing at some point. You write, the sight of my roots repulses me and this shames me deeply.
I think that having grown up in America for 20, 25 years, most of my values are Western and my education is very Western. So it was very confusing having to look back at my roots and then seeing that they don't measure up to what I've learned or what I felt was the norm. Even feeling a shame at that, and then you feel another shame on top of that for having feel shame in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So you were always the outsider in a way. You'd gone back to this place of your birth and your heritage. You just couldn't deal fully with your own good fortune in having gotten out of there.
That is something I still marvel to this day. I know that my father's colleagues, those who stayed, they were basically sent to a concentration camp or re-education camp, and all their possession was taken away. And their children now are rice farmers, and they can be seen out in the jungle go herding ducks and cattle. And then I look at myself, and of course, I ought to be shocked at the disparity.
But not just shocked.
Yeah, not just shocked, grateful, immensely grateful.
Andrew X. Pham. His book, Catfish and Mandela, published in 1999, is subtitled A Two-Wheeled Voyage Through the Landscape and Memory of Vietnam. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News, Washington.
Next Tuesday, Susan wraps up this series with two kayakers whose favorite summer is happening right now. There's more on the website, npr.org.